Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is produced in part by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 224 of the podcast with Selena Yoon, author-illustrator of Be a Friend. Selena's newest picture book is a quiet and gentle story that, quite honestly, reminds me a lot of Selena. It's about wearing your heart on your sleeve. It's about standing out, but not always being noticed. It's about how it only takes one person to see you or to get you, and then your whole world changes. It's a book that makes me feel a deep-down happiness, and one that I hope will do the same for you as well. Here is episode number 224 of the podcast with Selena Yoon. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Selena Yoon. I have waited for this day. I'm so thankful I get to talk to you.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to talk to you too, Matthew.
Selena, you are a presence in our library. And I should say you also were a presence in my previous library. And then I had the opportunity to open a new school and purchase new books. And you were one of the faces from our library that I wanted to make sure was present in the new place. Thank you just off the bat for your consistently outstanding books.
Thank you so much. You know, I've been doing this for about 15 years or maybe 16, but really I've just been public, I think, and like talking to people for about 3 or 4 years. So I still feel kind of new to interviews and talking with people about, you know, what I do. So, you know,
before you were talking to people, what were you doing?
Well, I really didn't get out much. I mean, I didn't do any public events. And I talked to my author friends about this, but I had a lot of anxiety with public speaking, with just being out there in public. Just, I mean, not with friends, but I just mean with public events and things of that nature, book signings. I had no interest in participating in anything like that. But when I was creating novelty books, I really didn't have to.
That's
there
correct.
Are no book signings for board books. There are no readings for babies' books. So I was very comfortable working like a hermit for about 10, 11 years of my career. And it's only through picture books that now I've come out. And I do a lot of speaking engagements. I do a lot of school visits and interviews. And so I'm still actually getting used to it. This is probably like my maybe third year. And so now I'm much more comfortable, but still a part of me, there's still that anxiety just a little bit, you know, before I do anything.
Well, I think though that as a writer, you don't enter into writing, maybe some people do, but you don't enter into writing in order to speak in front of hundreds of little faces. You write to write. or to
right.
Scratch that itch that some people have that feel called to write or to entertain or to do things like that. I think that there are so many different qualities that are also attributed to writers or that are maybe perhaps required of writers that that are not are not natural born writing skills, such as marketing and public speaking right. and things like that.
That's absolutely true. I mean, when you're writing, I need complete silence. And in fact, it's many people don't know this about me, but I never came into this career thinking that I would be a writer. My background is in graphic design. And so with this background, I didn't even think that I would be an illustrator. Writing was the farthest thing. I mean, the absolute farthest thing that I thought for myself as a career.
Really?
Because really, 100%. And I'll tell you exactly why. I struggled with reading and writing as a child. I came here to the United States when I was 4 years old. And of course, I didn't read, speak, write English, and neither did my parents. And this is absolutely true. I've never been read a children's book from my parents ever in my life. English was not spoken at home at all. And even to this day, when I go visit my parents, we speak in Korean. Hmm. And so we didn't have a lot of picture books, very few. I think I could remember maybe about two or three picture books in English, but my parents didn't read it to me. So I would look at the pictures. And so any exposure to books really was at school. And so with that, it's just I never really took to reading. And I was poor at writing. And my focus was on art because that was one thing that I could do that was universal. You know, I could look at picture books without having to read the words. And yes. I could still enjoy the pictures and still imagine a story. And so I had imagination and I had interest in art. But writing was just, again, the farthest thing from my mind. So my studies, when I started college, it was all about art. But, you know, again, I wasn't considering writing. I thought, well, you know, how could I could be an illustrator perhaps, but I didn't think I was actually good enough to be an illustrator. So I changed my major. I was thinking I wanted to be an illustrator, but I decided to be safer with graphic design. And I don't say that I don't mean to say that it's easy to be a graphic designer by all means. It's not. But I thought that I really couldn't draw well enough to be an illustrator while I still had my, I think, good design sensibilities. And so it just made sense for me to go into graphic design. And so my college years, you know, I was a graphic design major. So again, the idea of becoming a children's book author and illustrator, neither of those things were really on my mind. So it comes to me as a surprise too, to be here now and having written, you know, and illustrated so many books.
I love though that I think of my friends that my friends, I think of people I'm implying friendship on all of you. Love it. Love it yeah. or leave it.
You are.
You
okay.
have my love. Yeah. Well, I think of my graphic design friends though. And the way story is told through that. And it makes me grateful that you came into storytelling for children, because I think of like Joyce Wan, or I think of, Brian, Wan doing Hooray for Hat and books like that, that are so graphically strong
right.
and are edited, in design so well. And I think of you that way too, Selena, when I think of Found, when I think of Penguin, when I even think of your newest, when I think of Be a Friend, it's just the art is edited so well that things are staged, things are placed in the right way.
They're designed.
Yeah.
Right.
To read so beautifully. And that it's just a different quality. And I think you can feel it. If you've read enough picture books, you can feel it. And it's a nice feeling.
Oh, good. Good. Because you know, when I look at the work of, say, Lauren Long, you know, just the beautiful, beautiful illustrations, and I'm like, wow, I could never draw like that. Or Lauren Castillo, I could never draw like that. But when I look at books like Lois Ellert or Michael Hall or Michael Arndt,
yes.
or, you know, all of these sort of designer illustrators, I'm like, oh, you know, there could be a place for me. Even Eric Carle, you know, very much designed picture books.
Oh, yeah.
And that really opened my eyes to maybe, you know, I don't have to paint like Paul Zielinski to be a children's book illustrator. There's a place for me too.
Oh yeah. And yeah. And the way that there's a reader for you. I always like to think of it that way, that for your books, for everyone's books, there's always a reader or readers out there that your book is going to be just right for them. It's mm-hmm. I don't think it's possible for any one person to create a book that is meant for every single child.
Right.
But rather, absolutely. Rather that you do, I mean, it's sort of that adage that funny phrase that people say, that authors say when they're getting into it. I wrote this book so that even if it connects with just one child, right. it'll be enough. Like, well, you need it to connect with more than one child, right. but the sentiment of it connecting with one child is really all it takes. And you, well, I think Selena, this is a good time to bring up the book that we're connecting with over tonight because of connecting with someone. Your new picture book mm-hmm. is called Be a Friend.
Yes.
And I love it. Like, I love it, Selena. Like, I hug it. I love it. It's that kind of
Thank
love.
Thank you so much.
It's so wonderful. Do you mind sharing a book talk for the book, a synopsis of the book with the listeners?
Well, you know, I always have a hard time talking, sharing the synopsis because I end up like starting from like, okay, it starts like this, and I'm never good at synopses.
I don't mind if you would feel more comfortable with me doing it. I will certainly be sharing an awful lot of love at some point though.
Yes, yes. Well, you could talk a little bit about what it's about, and
sure.
and I'd love to share, you know, how it all came to be, and you know what it means to be, and how I connect with the story.
Oh, let's do that. I would love that. I would love for you to share that emotional point from it and that background of it. In Be a Friend, we meet a boy, Dennis, who everyone refers to as Mime Boy. And certainly reading the illustration, Dennis is a mime. And I actually think, Selena, what I love about this character, and take this as you want, I do mean it as a compliment, it seems like a Johnny Depp character to me. Like a child Johnny Depp. I love this quality of Dennis.
Awesome. That
he
is
just
awesome.
Is so expressive in his face. And for you to be illustrating so expressive, the expression in his face that way. Dennis doesn't speak a word in this story. He only acts out through scenes as a mime would. And I think that what makes this story unique is that it's not a story about feeling bad for Dennis, that he doesn't connect with other people, but rather knowing that there is a just right friend out there for everybody. And in this case, Dennis finds that just right friend for him, and finding that just right friend makes him fit in with everybody, makes him a part of the community with everyone. And that is sort of what I took away from
right.
this story.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And you notice that, of course, he never did have to speak. He never did have to change.
Correct.
To make that friend and to open up his world to the other children. You know, and I want to go back a little bit, just the day that I created this character, what's so ironic is that particular day, I wanted to write something brand new. I was in between a penguin and a bear story. And, you know, I've been doing penguin, bear, and then duck, duck, porcupine. And so I was in the penguin and bear world. But, you know, if you know my past work with the novelty and board books, you know, I used to create 10 to 12 brand new books every year, you know, with various publishers. And so I was used to working on so many different projects, and I would get bored if I was just working on one thing. And so when I had this little gap in time between a penguin and a bear story, I wanted to do something really different. And I wanted to try to write something really humorous, you know, like a humorous either picture book or a chapter book. I wanted to kind of challenge myself, try something totally different. Because okay. I don't write humor. And that was the fun of it, is I'm like, let's try something.
Yeah.
Let's see if I could be funny. Well, turns out, no. Okay. I'm not funny. And that's just not for me. And it's so funny. If you read Be a Friend, I mean, that's like the least funny book ever, right? I mean, it has its funny moments, but it's not humorous. And it's so funny that that's how it became. Because why I was a mime character is sort of a joke in my household. My husband loves to sort of tease mimes, and he's doing like the miming thing if I need quiet or something in my office and I don't have a door, and he'll mime a wall, you know, like, okay, I'm not going to break through your invisible wall. And so he cracks me up, and I'm like, okay, mimes are hilarious. And just on cartoons, I've seen mimes portrayed and you know, it's usually in fun. And I thought, okay, you know, I think a mime character would be hilarious for a book. But when I started to think about how this child would feel in a in a setting with other children, I couldn't help but think that it's really not funny that he would actually feel pretty alone. And my mind just went there instead of the other way where it could be funny. It's to me, it just wasn't funny. If he just simply was a mime, you know, and he doesn't choose to be this way, it's just that's who he is. And how do I help him connect with another child? And, you know, in this story, of course, you know that, when you talk about books, do you have to worry about spoiling, you know, do you have to do a spoiler alert, or do you just kind of talk around
it? I don't know. I tend to talk around it. I try not to say the ending.
Okay. But I know. I don't have
practice. It's one of those sort of given things that we know, well, it's a picture book. It's not like Poor Dennis, the end of the story is going to be, the book's called Be a Friend, but it really ought to be called Poor Dennis Has No Friends. No, it's not going to end that way.
So he doesn't speak, and you know, it was important for me in the particular spread where it says everyone called him Mime Boy, but I didn't make it seem like people were teasing him. Someone could take it that way, you know, people can be called things that they don't like. But for Mime Boy, he embraced who he was. Right. And so in the spread where it says everyone called him Mime Boy, he's actually, you know, lit up in his mind. He's lit up on stage with a spotlight on him, and he's very proud and he's very happy to be a mime. And that was important to show that he was happy with who he was. And the only sadness came from him not being able to connect with other children. And the way that I connected with the story, and, you know, when I wrote this story, I really try to be Dennis, you know, think about who he was and where the story would go. I wasn't thinking about my own personal story or somebody else's personal story. I wrote the story that I felt was authentic to this character that I made up in my mind, that just felt so real in my mind. But after I wrote the story, it was so interesting to me because I did have a deep connection to how he felt. Mm. And of course, you know, how many of us are mimes? I mean, some theater people, I'm sure, could say, oh yeah, I was a mime. But how many of us can say, you know, we were a mime? No one. And that was the whole point of picking a character that we all, of course, you know, we're not mimes, but we can connect with him on a universal level on just how he feels.
Yes.
In feeling different. And that was, of course, the whole idea of him being a mime. But how I connected with the story was when I was, you know, when I was 4 years old and I didn't speak a word of English. I started school, kindergarten at 5, and I stayed quiet. And I was extremely shy because I didn't speak the language and I would avoid eye contact with my teacher. I couldn't talk to other kids, and there could have been other kids that spoke Korean. You know, I came from Korea, but I was just too shy. And it was because of the language barrier. And so for me, that's how I connected. I felt different. I felt isolated and alone until I met a friend. Somewhat like Mime Boy. So that's how it was really special for me. After I'd written this, I thought, wow, you know, I bet a lot of kids feel different for so many reasons, you know, not just because of a language barrier, you know, maybe it's special, a special needs child, or maybe a child that's a slow reader, you know. Like it was for me.
Even, I mean, so much of this story, or maybe even so much about being a mime, is imagining and being imaginative. And I think of, well, just today I was reading, goodness, what book was I reading? I believe I was reading Snapsy the Alligator Doesn't Want to Be in This Book. I was reading Julie's book to the kids. But one of the kids was reacting in such a way, like, just sort of like writing it off, just sort of, that wouldn't happen. And I felt like, I felt like it's so sad for you to not be able to imagine that a story can happen. I feel bad for you. But in this way, don't we all sort of walk through life having those moments? I mean, I think of some of my students that are so imaginative and just want to play and be in that world. This is my son and I on Sunday, we went to the grocery store, and having, at 5 years old, having very recently watched the original Star Wars trilogy with me that weekend, we sort of, you know, binge watched them all. He wanted to have a lightsaber battle with me with invisible lightsabers in the middle of the grocery store. Of course I'm going to do that. Why would I not do that? But to be a kid that has that sort of a mind and to just be like ignored by people, that's also isolating, the same way that having a special need can be, or having something that makes you different or apart from other people.
Right.
But Selena, you, the designer, there are things in here that I feel like reveal so much about Dennis just by being there, like the way that he almost literally wears his heart on his sleeve.
That's exactly
that pinned on exactly red heart, that color that pops on him.
That came from Matthew. Yes. I'm so glad you said that, because he does wear his heart on his sleeve, and I was going to literally illustrate it that way, and then I thought, no, you know, it's better if he wore it on his by his heart, you know, on his chest. And I specifically made it, it's an imperfect heart. It looks like it's a little choppy because I want it to be something that he made. And when I make these myself, it's out of felt, you know, and just a safety pin that he clips onto his heart.
Yes.
And that is a very meaningful thing, because as you may have noticed, it doesn't necessarily stay on his shirt the whole time in the book. That's all I'll say. But that is important. And also, you might have noticed that, and of course, being that this is a podcast, you don't actually see the book, but the color palette is completely different from any of my other books.
It is. It's very different. The sepia tone that carries throughout feels, it almost feels like a silent movie to me in that way.
You were like reading my mind.
Because... Let me just tell you, I appreciate this book perhaps more than you can even guess.
Wow. I'm actually so impressed that you, again,
you're very
revealed
sweet.
That. Because that's what I was thinking. It's when I was, after I had the character and the story laid out, I had to think about how I wanted to illustrate this. And it was definitely not going to be illustrated as... In the style of Penguin or Bear or any of those really bright colored animated.
Sort of those like block color. Yeah. Right.
Right. Right. And so I was thinking about, well, Dennis is silent. And so that immediately made me think of the silent film era. And so I was watching, you know, a lot of Marcel Marceau, miming, performances, you know, on YouTube, and, you know, some of them were black and white. And I just thought, you know, especially with the silent films, I just thought this would be so cool as a black and white book. But, you know, I still wanted to give it some color and a feeling of nostalgia. And so I brought in the backgrounds are all this antique, really old paper.
Okay, I was going to say there's a quality on it that feels like rubbed or something, but it's actually scanned paper. That's cool.
Right. And so the colors are very sort of monotone, you know, sepia tone, except the pop of red. And the red is so important because, of course, you know that I use the red dotted lines to show his imagination. And, you know, I have words that I accent in red to tie in with the pictures. So,
but I love also when you do, when you have like a couple of framed pictures, if you will, instead of just a full blade spread, where you actually make like these, I call them frames because it actually has like an old, what looks like an old rusted frame. Right. Like I found like my grandmother always spent the summers at Coney Island, and here was this boy that she met, and here's these old, developed images of them.
Yes, that's what I was hoping for, that like old photographs.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have a timeless appeal, not only to the story, but also to the art, so that you really can't place when this happened. And even with the clothing, you know, I try to make it as generic as possible with the style of clothing, so that
the children,
so that it is timeless, so that you can't tell if it's from, you know, the earlier in the century or another, or when it was, or, you know, what time period really. I try to keep it. I mean, it is somewhat modern, you know, that it's probably within the last, I don't know, 60 years or so, but I like that it is not so time specific.
Well, and I like that in playing, in acting, in being a role, I like that your title is Be a Friend. Mm-hmm. Not just because of the call to be nice to people, but I mean, when you're miming, when you're pantomiming, it's okay, now be a dog. Okay, now be a police officer. Now be a whatever. Now be a friend.
Wow, I never thought of it that way.
Oh, this whole time I thought that that's why it was called that way. And the more I think on that title, whenever I tell people about this book, I can't help but punctuate the word be.
Oh, wow.
Be a friend. I find myself saying it that way.
That's really wonderful. Honestly, I didn't even come up with the title. Originally, the title was The Silent Adventures of Mime Boy.
Oh, cool.
But there are several issues with that. And, you know, there was even some concern originally about the character of a mime. Do children even know what mimes are? Because it's not really in popular culture, you know, not so much young children.
Yeah, but this brings it to the quality that I think why the book speaks to me, and why I think it will continue to speak to other adults, is that there's a quality here that feels so much like you want to share this book with children. And I'm specifically thinking in the context of an educator, that as an educator, when I'm thinking of, even like when I'm thinking of you coming to my school, and how lovely it would be just to have all of the children wearing these felt hearts on their, on their shirts. But also, in your end papers, you have Dennis, wearing, or Dennis in all these different framed pictures, and showing him in these different poses, and then those red dots, as you're saying, the dashes outlining whatever it is he's miming, that he's on a bike or that he's in a spotlight or what have you. And I keep thinking, like, that there, it reminds me also of what's the book? Not a Box. Do you know Not a Box?
Oh, yes, of course, by Antoinette Portis.
Not a Box. That same way that in that book, in this one now too, I finally have a partner to share with that book.
Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Oh, same thing.
Mention that, yes.
But to start with a shape is what I keep thinking. Like, in Not a Box, you start with the shape of a box, and you are able to draw it into other things, right? This story, we can start with an image of ourselves and draw other things around ourselves. I just loved that the notion of, like, taking a photo of a child and having them being able to, on the iPad, just draw these dots of themselves doing whatever. What are you imagining? Draw for me what you're imagining.
Right. Or not draw, but use your bodies and show. Like, in fact, I have the, like you mentioned, the end papers. I have about, I think, 8 different poses that's repeated. But I wanted kids to go through them and try to act them out, you know, physically.
Yes.
And, you know, if you look at the story from the beginning, you see him do his mimes, solo mimes, like pulling on a rope, for example, or going, you know, walking down the stairs, that sort of thing. And then later you'll see him doing mimes where it's just with 2 people. And then, you know, maybe something different later. It's I'm awful at
no. You are inviting,
but
you're inviting people to play Selena,
right?
And but to play does. Independently, and then to play with a friend to
and
mimic
so
the story.
He grows in that way.
Yes,
in learning
yes.
to play with others. Still being able to be himself and not to change. And that was such an important element that he does not change, that he doesn't start just talking to everyone. And I know that that is in some ways giving something away, but it's really not. I mean, it shouldn't be. He's a mime, you know, let him be.
Well, I mean, even looking at the cover of the book, which, by the way, I love that that also is an image that we don't see. If I remember right, we don't see that in the rest of the book, right? The image
right.
of the flower.
Right.
I love that that's a special thing that sort of is then the cover itself telling a story and reminding readers, if they haven't read the story yet, of what is to come, but also if they have read it, of what we've experienced together. Yeah, the whole book is such a beautiful sentiment, Selena. You really did such a gorgeous job with it.
Oh, thank you so much, Matthew. It's just... when I wrote this, I had no idea how special it would become for me, but it really has been that way for me. Just such a personal book.
I'm glad it has. Yeah. Well, and this is one of many that you have. We were talking before recording that I said when I got the copy from Bloomsbury that came with a note about, well, describing you, which is fun to hear a friend described when I'm like, wait, I know Selena from Facebook. This is fun that you're telling me about her. But also that it said on there that you're the award-winning author of nearly 200 books. And I thought, right. Oh, wow. No, I didn't know 200. That's amazing. But you have written so many. And I understand that some of them are these novelty books.
10-page board books, right.
But still, they count. And it was also really cool to hear from you. And I'm going to bring it back up. That the publisher also was counting these foreign, how do we call it? Foreign published books?
Foreign editions?
Foreign editions, yes. Uh-huh. Which is awesome because then, I'm going to bring it up. I keep saying I'm going to bring it up because I'm excited about it. The idea that when your book is published, that sometimes the other publishers around the world take it and want to make different versions of it and want to make a Spanish version and want to make a German version or a Korean version or what have you. And that often, or maybe sometimes often, you get to get copies of these and get right. to be surprised that, oh my word, my book is reaching this kind of audience.
Right, right. That is special. I mean, it's with Penguin and Pinecone, I believe they're in the Penguin series about 10 different foreign editions. I'm not exactly sure because I don't get copies of every single foreign edition for all of my books. But Bloomsbury's pretty good about getting me the foreign editions. But it's what's amazing about that is because it's pretty tricky having a foreign edition because the art style may not be suitable or may not be appropriate. And for a different country, you know, everyone has their own aesthetics. And so it's tricky to appeal to a foreign country and the story as well. Sometimes stories don't translate, you know, outside of the U.S. Even it doesn't seem like it's a sort of story just for the U.S., but sometimes it just doesn't translate that well. But because of so many of my picture books have been translated in foreign editions, I feel like there's a great universal theme to them that allows that to happen. So that's been so rewarding, you know, to realize that a story doesn't just work for here, you know, in the United States, that it could also work in Italy, in France, and in Welsh, in Wales, you know, in the Welsh language. In Tibet, in Tibetan,
yes.
You know, and I just found out that Be a Friend is being translated into Spanish and Catalan. It'll also be published in the UK, and that's just the beginning. I suspect that there'll be more in the future, but it's just already, you know, I know that there's going to be different editions all over the world, so that's a great feeling.
Well, and to know that some of these editions too are rare, are ones you don't hear about a lot, like being published in Welsh, like being published
right.
in Tibetan. That must be special. Do you have any stories behind any of these that you get to hear other than, I don't know, sometimes they just come in the mail and it's like, oh, awesome. This is written in a language I can't read.
Right, right. Well, the one in Tibetan was particularly special because, and that one wasn't like any other foreign sale. It was not a typical licensing deal per se. It was a special request made by this organization called the Snow Lion Storytelling Initiative. And I believe this was back in 2012. And the project consisted of a group of people that were going to select just 5 books from the United States and translate them into Tibetan to share with the children, the refugee children from Tibet in northern India, where they were forming schools. And so they were going to publish these to give it to those children and to preserve the language of Tibet and, you know, have it written in that language. And so when I heard about this, I mean, I thought, my God, you know, what an honor, just five books. And from those 5 books, and
that is incredible.
Right. And my book was actually the only one that was newly published that year. It published in 2012, and they started this project, I believe it was 2012. So that was especially incredible, and I have just 2 copies of that. That's not going anywhere. I'm going to keep that one forever.
I can imagine. And to have it like that, to know that this book that you started off writing just for yourself, for children to read and enjoy and what have you, could end up serving a purpose like that. I mean, to see that these books, whether we plan for them to or not, that some can have these higher callings is really something that I think is incredible.
It was incredible because they were looking for books that I believe that not only would have a universal theme, but would inspire curiosity about the world, I think is what specifically they were looking for. And for, you know, Penguin and Pinecone to be one of those books was absolutely incredible. And I don't know if you know this, but Penguin and Pinecone was the first story that I had ever written.
Really? I did not know that.
It was the first story because all the other books prior to that were concept books. And so I was telling you that I was a designer. And so I designed, you know, over 130 plus board books. And of course they have words in them, but they weren't stories. They were concepts, very different. And so this is the first time that I wrote a story, you know, with a narrative arc, and I didn't even know what a narrative arc was, actually. I had, when my agent was telling me that I needed a stronger arc, I'm like, what is that? And I had to look it up, and very new to writing. And that was the first story that I had written, but because of Penguin and Pinecone, it led to all of my other picture books after that. And so now I think I've done maybe 10 or 11. I don't count my books, but I think that's where I am. And right now I am currently working on the 6th Penguin book and will have to be getting to my 4th Bear book. And I have also an early reader series with Bloomsbury called Duck Duck Porcupine that comes out in May. And I'll be doing 3 books in that series.
Wow. But Penguin and
Pinecone, thank you. But Penguin and Pinecone started all of that because that gave me the confidence after I was able to sell it to Bloomsbury.
Yes.
Maybe I could do this. So that was a big milestone for me.
Selena, while we were talking, I'll put this in the show notes. I Googled the Snow Lion Storytelling Initiative. And wouldn't you know, like they're, a couple posts ago, they shared about the Bologna Children's Book Fair in 2014, and there are pictures of Penguin and Pinecone.
Right, that is where it was discovered.
That is awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah,
it's your book, and I'm seeing the children reading it, and just seeing. Yeah, I'll make sure I link this. That's amazing. I don't know how else to say this. I'm proud for you, Selena. I'm really happy for you. I'm glad that your books have the opportunity to connect with kids all over the world.
Thank you. It's a shock to me. I had no idea that I'd even be able to pull off you know, even having it sold. It's just, and to be able to do this for a living, I still am in disbelief, I have to say. I mean, people don't believe that, but I really don't know how I got to do this for as long as I have. You know, it's an amazing feeling.
Well, perhaps that is what is keeping you at the top of your game and keeping you challenging yourself and being critical of your work and pushing yourself to tell new stories.
Perhaps, because I still don't feel comfortable with it. You know, I don't feel like I could just relax and sit back. You know, I always feel like it's not quite good enough. And how could I push myself a little farther? You know, especially with Be a Friend, you know, in between the Penguin and Bear stage, when I had that little free moment, I had about a month that I thought I could play to just do whatever I want. And for me, I play by coming up with new ideas. That's my idea of fun. And but I didn't want to just do another book that's like everything else that I've done. And so I specifically tried to push myself. And in between Penguin and Bear, I also did a book called Tap to Play with Harper Collins. And again, when I was doing that, I'm like, okay, I want you to do something totally different from everything else you're doing. And so that's been my theme. I'm not comfortable just doing one thing forever. And as happy and excited I am about Penguin's success, it's important for me to try other kinds of stories, which is why I'm trying this early reader series. And so, yeah, you know, I try to keep it fun for myself and also challenging so I can grow. You know, I don't want to be doing the same thing 5-10 years from now.
Well, so keep doing what you're doing, Selena. You're doing great. I'm going to give you a moment to relax a little bit. Relax with friends. No pressure. I'm going to take you out onto the kickball field, out in maybe your sunny backyard.
Okay. Yeah.
not sunny where I am, Selena. Get a little chilly out here in Maryland. But it's something I've been looking forward to asking you for a while, which is that I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person you would want on your team and why.
Okay, well, you know what? I have played kickball before, which
yes!
I love.
Yes, awesome. Good. I'm glad you have.
The mom-son kickball tournament.
Oh.
In school. So I love kickball. I would love to have on my team Samantha Berger.
Yes.
She's just phenomenal, just as a person and also as an author. She's an author of Boo La La, Witch Spa, Snooze Fest, Krankenstein, and many other books. And she's just such a great cheerleader of Kidlit and so supportive of other authors and illustrators in Kidlit. And I think she'd make a great cheerleader for kickball as well as a great player. You know, I think she's, I've seen her, I've seen pictures of her like kicking. She's very flexible. She could totally kick. I think she'd be a phenomenal player. So yeah, that would be Samantha Berger.
I kind of feel like when in life you have a question and you're not sure what to do or where to go, Samantha Berger might be the answer.
I think so.
I'm glad you mentioned her. It makes me smile to hear that name come up. Selena, thank you so much again for coming on to chat with me. This was really an honor for me to get to talk to you. And I am so thankful that Be a Friend will soon be out in the hands of readers and connecting with them and moving them. Thank you so much again.
Well, thank you, Matthew. It's really been a pleasure talking with you.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and The Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Andy Rash shares the story behind Archie the Daredevil Penguin. And later in the week, Kwame Alexander talks about The Crossover, as well as Surf's Up, his newest picture book, illustrated by Daniel Miaris. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.